A Jerry Pippin special report. Chemtrails, a project from hell. Sometime in the late 70s, it became apparent that the high-flying contrails of superjets crossing the sky was much more than just a romantic reminder that we were deep in the heart of the jet age. These contrails were lasting longer, and they seemed to be crisscrossing each other. We have decided to do this investigative series on this phenomenon, and it appears that there is something sinister going on. But why?
And I talked to my NSA buddies at Fort Carson, Peterson Air Force Base, and Buckley, where I was actually their doctor taking care of the pilots flying and spraying the chemtrails. So I know it's real. If anybody says it's not real, they're full of it.
It seems to be apparent from looking at the patents for aerospraying and for using nanoparticles to put into the atmosphere. These particles seem to be made of aluminum, barium, and other elements. There's even evidence that it's in jet fuel itself, not as a byproduct, but put there evidently to aid in this worldwide effort of covering the skies with what we know now as chemtrails.
Well, many of the planes that we're seeing here in Abilene will actually turn whatever they're spraying on and off right before our eyes. I mean, you'll see a plane up there flying like normal, and then all of a sudden it starts spraying. We've seen them fly off into the distance and then loop around and fly back again. These are not your typical planes with a preordained path destination from city to city. Someone needs to explain to me why do they stop traveling in one particular direction and then loop around and come back again. They perform this behavior so many times that we start seeing the tic-tac-toe grids in the sky. We're witnessing the giant X's.
The FAA at one time said it was acid rain. They were combating acid rain. Yes, the FAA has acknowledged that something is going on in the skies. Our investigation shows that there are specially fitted aircraft. For 30 years, this has been happening with these aircraft. They've been fitted, and they've been flying. And all this costs money. So who is paying for it? And why? What kind of public money is being used? And who's getting the income? Is it really necessary? And is this threat real, or is it only a way for these corporations to make a lot of money? There may be many agendas here. All are coming into play. Seems to be a perfect storm, benefiting certain groups. Seems that the chemical industry has been working for some time on specially developed plants. They're hybrids, half nature, half chemical. Think of the money that could be made if Mother Nature's seeds no longer worked in the chemically changed compounds that have been dropped onto the soil. Agribusiness should not be discounted at all as one of the culprits. The potential of huge profits is certainly there, and it's worldwide, and chemtrails are seen everywhere around the globe. There is a trail, a paper trail, of what was done before. But why is it so guarded securely by such regulators as EPA, air and water quality control experts, as well as the oversight of the FAA itself, NOAA, NASA, and the United States Air Force? The list goes on and on. There's lots of oversight into our laws, but are these laws being circumvented? We will be examining all of these issues with several guests in this series. Let's get the series underway first with investigative filmmaker Roxy Lopez, who's been on our show before, and she's speaking to us from her home in Arizona. In fact, she lives very close to one of the centers of the chemtrail creators, a company called Evergreen Incorporated. We'll talk about this and much more with Roxy, so stay tuned. But right now, Roxy, I'd like to welcome you to the show. And how are you?
I'm great, Jerry. How you doing?
Roxy, as you know, this will be a continuing series, but in this first of the series of programs, we have three guests that we'll be bringing on before it's over, and one of them is Michael Murphy, and I've never had Michael on the air, so why don't you tell the audience a little bit about who Michael Murphy is?
Michael Murphy is the producer and director of a film called What in the World Are They Spraying? And he can explain a little bit more of that. It's very popular. It just recently came out, and it's basically a documentary that they did in Hawaii and Arizona and Mount Shasta regarding geoengineering chemtrails. They have a lot of research that they have done, and it's, I commend them for doing that. They also did it in conjunction with Edward Griffin, I'm sure you know. And they have made a very big dent in the so-called conspiracy of chemtrails.
Well, Roxy, you're a pretty good little movie maker yourself. People who are members of Facebook, they can check out the Roxy Lopez page. Or, you know, go to YouTube and put your name in there. You got a lot of videos there, too. They're all very, very good. Mark McCandish will join us later in the series. And you and Mark have been talking.
Yes, we have.
Well, tell our audience what you've been talking about.
Well, Mark and I have been talking about quite a few things, planes, uses of planes, and some of the chemical relationships to, in general, you know, weather modification or perhaps an angle on what we have been seeing. I went through Mark after we did the Evergreen video, the Pinal Air Park Evergreen video, and we can discuss a little bit of that more. But I did go to Mark asking some pertinent questions in relationship to what I had seen and what I had filmed, and he seems to be a plethora of information as far as giving us some insight on what certain planes are used for, et cetera, et cetera.
Mark's quite a talented guy. He's a conceptual artist by trade. He works with aerospace industries, drawing things by specification. Very interesting. He knows a lot about almost everything.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
Let's talk about chemtrails. You've been involved with this for some time, Roxy, and lots of information now is becoming public. All of a sudden, it's been going on for three decades, maybe more. What's it all about, anyway? I mean, why was it so secretive? And I guess it still is.
You know, I think, if to answer that question fairly, I think that it is really connected to a whole lot of agenda, and global warming, mastering the science of weather control, weather warfare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there are a lot of money. That's another real big one. Where's the money coming from and who's making money off of it? It's really thick, hence the coming together of many different groups who have been investigating this, you know, real investigators looking for true data on all of this. I think for the mainstream or the general population, it would be best to not discuss, not on your show, I mean, I think this is their agenda. You're opening up a can of worms if you start using these terminologies to the general public of, you know, weather modification, controlling the weather by 2025, the side effects of trying or attempting to control the weather. What does that mean to us as a population? Can it go bad? Can it go awry? Has it already done that, being that even cloud seeding has been in this state legalized since the early 80s, and I have a lot of proof of that. You know, and what are the side effects of cloud seeding, and what are the side effects of trying to reroute, let's say, water in one area causing drought in another? There's a huge liability factor there that's not being addressed as well. So if the public doesn't know it exists, then the public doesn't really have any rights.
Let's get right to it, Roxy. You mentioned Evergreen, and I did too at the top of the show. This is a company that has facilities at
Pinal Air Park.
Yeah, Pinal Air Park. Now, you went out there. Can you tell me about it? About the airpark and about Evergreen.
I guess Evergreen has part of the space is located there.
It is. It leases from what I can find out. It leases space from the county. So Pinal Airpark is supposed to be a public landing space for, you know, pilots and gasoline and a little coffee shop. And at the same time, if you do some aerial footage, it's a boneyard, which is a boneyard is, you know, retired planes or planes that aren't in use anymore, maybe used for parts and things like that. And then there's a portion of it that's also leased out to the there's black ops there. There's they store black helicopters there and fly black helicopters there. And then there's the National Guard training there, and then there's Evergreen. And there's a whole part of that park that is off limits to the general public. You cannot go in. It's guarded. And but I have supporting evidence when I went into just the land contract there, who does what. Evergreen is leasing the space from the county of Pinal in Arizona.
Okay, for our listeners, where's Pinal County? I mean, what
Pinal
town's
is
in here?
Well, it's county, but it's somewhere called Marana, which is close to Tucson, Arizona.
And you use the term boneyard for those old airplanes. I've never heard that before. It's a graveyard for airplanes that are no longer in service.
Yes, those in Tucson, I know a lot of people in Tucson that I've spoken with, and they've known about, ironically, they've even known about Evergreen for quite some time.
Now, you've looked into Evergreen, and you know about them. So tell our audience and tell me about what Evergreen is exactly.
Evergreen Aviation is, you know, there's a lot to support that they are somehow contracted or owned by the CIA, but yet they are a private corporation. They even do trade on the U.S. stock market. In many facets, but as far as Arizona goes, Evergreen Maintenance, it's unclear as to what they do, and I can explain how I know that after speaking with the guard there.
Now, as I understand it, Roxy, you never really made it inside. I mean, you just made it up to the guard's gate. Is that right?
That's as far as we were allowed to go. We weren't. We were told to turn around and leave, but as far as what are they doing, it's vast. I mean, Evergreen is known for the Evergreen Supertanker. The Evergreen Supertanker is a large plane, which Mark McCandlish can talk to us a little bit about, more about in depth what they do. Basically, when at first sight with Evergreen Aviation, it appears to be, you know, planes that, you know, put out fires, let's say, large fires. That would be the uses of some of the planes. But then there's a lot of other areas of Evergreen that, for instance, on the Evergreen Aviation website that is here local to Arizona at Pinal Airport, they do have listed on their website that they do weather modification. That is one of their clients, and you can even look into some of their clients, and that's where the rabbit hole goes deeper and deeper, what those clients do. They also do aerosol fitting to aerosol fitting would be the aerosols that are being sprayed into the air, those big white strips that everybody sees in gridlocks and X's. So the aerosol canisters, if you will, can be fitted onto planes, and they offer this to private citizens as well, private pilots, if they want to be involved in we don't know what, because it doesn't state what those aerosols would be. For instance, if I called there and I had a plane and I wanted to get fitted for these aerosols, at that point, when I would call, I guess the next question I would ask is, what is the use of the aerosols, and do I get paid for having these attached to my plane, and what will, you know, what will I be, what will be the purpose of it? Will I be employed by them? So those are unanswered questions at this point, because unless I call them and find out as a person of, you know, that I'm interested in this service that they provide, they do not explain any further in detail what they
now,
need.
Now, Roxy, I must tell you, I haven't had the sinister angle on chemtrails. I haven't had the sinister angle on chemtrails like most people until recently. I always just thought it was kind of high-tech crop spraying, only they were way up in the air. You know what I mean?
They do have those applications. For instance, in the 80s, you know, that, and I thought the same thing as well, Jerry, because I remember being in California during the couple of years of MedFly spraying. And there were, you know, planes that would go out at night, and they would warn the public not to go out in a certain day because they were going to be spraying some chemicals for the, the invasion of MedFlies. Attacking crop and things like that.
Yes, the great MedFly episode in California. Always wondered if that was really the straight skinny. The story they were telling us was true, or was it something more devious?
We wondered about that back then, because one of the side effects, and this would be if you were chemical spraying, one of the side effects is people were getting really ill. And getting flus and being told to stay inside, and how can you stay inside for a whole month? But we wondered about that way back then. We kind of discussed that and said, what are they really doing? The program did eventually go away and out of sight, out of mind, okay?
Well, Roxy, if you fast forward today and the chemtrail situation, some of it may be the same. Some of it may be legitimate, some of it may not. But let's tell the audience, you got a video about it, but let's tell the audience about your visit to the Evergreen Gate.
Yes. Well, what had happened in brief, we had been on Google Earth taking a look at Pinal Air Park, because there had been some rumor, all right? So we got on Google Earth and started to see all these planes parked and, photos of these planes that appear to be images that I had been taking videos of when over our skies here. And they looked similar with, like, the red bellies on the plane and things like that that were doing heavy spraying. And so I thought, wow, let's go down there. Being it's a public air park, let's go take a closer look at Pinal Air Park. It was just a shot in the dark. Now, keep in mind, I did not know at that time, I had not made a connection to Evergreen facility being down at Pinal Air Park. So I intend fully to get in the car, take a couple of cameras, and we head down there to go in and take a look at the air park that's public. Now, as we're going down the freeway, and I do film that, I film the exit, and so other people can go down there if they want. One of the first things we noticed that was a little peculiar was we get off the freeway, and the freeway, if you get off of it, there's no stop sign or stoplight where you can go left and go into the city or anything. It's a ramp that goes directly either to Pinal Air Park or back onto the freeway if you go to the left. And we kind of made a note of that that's kind of weird. This kind of drops you off in nowhere. And if you didn't know where you were going, you'd be roping yourself right back onto the freeway again, going, what happened? Where'd that exit go? So we go ahead and take that exit that goes directly to Pinal Air Park. It says Pinal Air Park on the freeway signs, etc. So, you know, we're heading off there. But then what's right in front of us about 50 yards ahead is a big sign that says Evergreen Maintenance Center with a guard shack. And I say, oh, my gosh, keep driving, because I did not expect that. I was, like, blown away. Meanwhile, backtrack a little bit. While we were on that freeway, about less than a mile before we're getting off of that exit, we did notice all of those planes parked just like how we saw on Google Earth. So I shot all of that live to note that there's all those planes. And then there's the exit. You get off, and now we're faced with Evergreen. So we passed it, and there's only, you know, fields and some mines out there of some sort going on. No houses or anything, no residential anywhere. And so we think about it and gather our thoughts, and I say, well, let's just go to the guard shack then. Because I said, we must be at the wrong place, because there are the planes right there, and this says Evergreen, and how weird, this is Pinal Air Park. Let's just ask, it can't hurt. So we drive in, put the cameras down, and ask, as just, you know, citizens driving by on the freeway and notice the air park, And the first question, first thing we notice is that the guard is actually wearing, on the left is his name and on the right is Evergreen, fatigue, with a, you know, little identification that he works for Evergreen. So we say, hey, you know, what is this? Where are we? Is this Pinnell Air Park? And he says, no. And we say, but the sign says Pinnell Air Park and the directions are to Pinnell Air Park, then what is this? And he doesn't say anything. And we say, okay, the sign here says Pinnell Air Park, but it also has a bigger sign in front of that that says Evergreen Maintenance Center. Is this Evergreen? And he says, yes. And then we ask the next question, oh, well, what do you do? What does Evergreen do? And he says he can't comment. He's very nice, and he asks us to leave. And I said, okay, wait. So how do we get over to those planes, all the planes that are parked? Do you have planes here? And he said, we have no planes. And we're looking at them. And I said, okay. And, of course, I had already taken the photos of them, and they're on Google Earth as well. So he says, there are no planes here. And I said, okay, is this a government facility, or what is this? And he says, no, this is a private corporation, and it's heavily monitored, and you need to leave. Now, as we are there speaking with him, we notice black helicopters as well that are, you know, a couple of them flying around the perimeter of the entire what appears to be Pinnell Air Park. And so we mention that, and then he, the guard says back to us that, you know, we really need to turn around and leave. He claims, and quote unquote, he says, I've said more than I should have, so you do need to leave. And that was it. Now we do turn around. We notice there's another set of guards ahead of us. So in other words, if we would have run through that guard station, there were more guards ahead to stop you from getting into the facility. We did notice many cars leaving the facility while we were parked there. We turned around, exited, and upon our exit, we noticed Channel 13 News. And they went in. And we thought, whoa, what's Channel 13 News doing at Evergreen? That's interesting. So I made a note of that as well. They went in, and they were gone now. And I thought, God, maybe we can wait till they come back out. Or, you know, what's the deal here? What are they doing at Evergreen, you know, this highly secured area? What do they know that what a coincidence. This was December 3rd, by the way. And anyone can do their homework on this if they choose. So we turned around and we went to the other side of the freeway to continue to keep an eye on this facility. When we did that, we were followed by a couple. Well, at first, we just thought somebody was just behind us, a van. But then we had a mini convoy at the end of the first 45 minutes behind us. And this is, like I said, this is across the freeway now where we can still take photos. We can still watch some action. We did watch some chemtrail planes. We did not see them land there, but we did see chemtrail planes. We got some good footage of a cloud that was spread all the way out, and then it turned into multicolors, and so we got that on film as well. That's typical out here that we're seeing more and more often.
Roxy, interesting choice of words, convoy. I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about, you know, security jeeps, SUVs, things like that. Is that what we're talking about? Were they in security vehicles?
They were not security. These were different types of. One of them that stood out was we were going north on the side of the freeway, and a van, a big white van, was coming towards us, going the opposite direction. That van pulled off the road, made a U-turn, and got behind us. And that's where that's why it became noticeable. But you know, people make mistakes all the time and make U-turns and go back another direction. By the way, in the middle of nowhere, I don't know why they would have to do that, being that the freeway was right around the corner and they could have just backtracked on the freeway.
Could you see who was in that white van?
No, we didn't. We didn't see any people. We were looking in the rear view. It was getting a little weird, but we were more focused on what was going on in the air because I wanted to capture footage of the black helicopters that were now on our side of the freeway, the opposite side of the freeway.
Wow, I love it. A white van and now black helicopters. Were the black helicopters looking at you?
It looked like it. Because, you know, they were, you know, when we had first approached Pinal Air Park or Evergreen from the freeway, we noticed a couple of black helicopters that were going around and around the, let's call it the compound. So now we're on the opposite side of the freeway, and those helicopters have now come to our side of the freeway. That's pretty noticeable. And they weren't harassing or anything, but one of them flew pretty darn low right over us. Okay, that could be a coincidence, too. All right? Whatever. Now what we have done is we're continuing to head. We lose the GPS signal. That happens, too. But now we're on a no-name road on the opposite side of the freeway. We would pull over. We would park just take some footage. And then continue on to see if there. We turned east on a dirt road that had it was called Missile something. It's on the video, and we turned right on that road because we thought that's an interesting name. And then that's when we noticed people were following us because now everyone turned with us on this dirt road. Why would everybody be going down this dirt road? The dirt road actually led to nowhere. I did film at the very end. It had some signs that said, you know, aerial tracking, etc. in this area. So I don't know what they're tracking. I don't know what they're looking at. And it's like a warning sign not to go any further. There were a bunch of mailboxes at the end of this road, but no houses. So we thought that was a little peculiar, and so we pulled over to look like in park in front of the mailboxes to make it look like we were getting our mail. When we did that, those other cars turned around and left and went back to the main road because we got out of our car, and I thought, well, you know, we've got the cameras out. If somebody confronts us, we've got it on camera. I think they did notice that we had cameras. It wasn't hard to not notice that we had cameras in our hands. So we kind of, you know, said, okay, what was that all about? And proceeded to, you know, see if we could find anything else that was substantial in that area. And I will make a note right here. About a week and a half ago, I don't know if any of the listeners have seen this or if you have, but about a week and a half ago, a helicopter that was apparently the pilot was like, it was like a sheriff's helicopter, and three other individuals crashed in that area that we were at, crashed on that mountain range there, and we can't seem to get any more information about that story. I've even gone to CBS, a connection that I have there now, and asked what they thought of that. But back to Evergreen, you know, we continued our filming. We finished up. Like I said, we looked around the area to see if we could find anything that was odd-looking or any sort of different types of towers out there in the mountain range, et cetera, and we were not successful at finding anything out of the ordinary. Kind of time to leave and get out of there. And we came back home with our footage and began to put it together for the video that you saw. So that's where that happened. I will say this, within a day, I began to get strange phone calls, and I'm not kidding you. People do call me, but I was getting phone calls, very strange, from people who wanted to meet me, like out in Gila Bend, and one guy even said that he was my cousin. He used my cousin's full name, and it's a cousin that I hadn't spoken to in 30 years. And he sounded like he could have even been my cousin. And if he'd run out of gas coming down from California, and if I could go and meet him. And then I took the number down that he called me from, and he said, you know, I said, let me make a couple phone calls, and I'll call you right back. I called him back in about under five minutes. And when I called him back, that number was disconnected.
Now, that's pretty strange. Conceivably, they could have ran your plates.
And
got a hold of you that way.
And it was to put a little bit of fear into me. And by the way, when that happened, it was I actually tracked down my cousin. And come to find out, my cousin just happened to be in Virginia at the time. He's in his late 60s, and he just...
Weird. I mean, they would have your cousin's right name and everything. What does your cousin do?
My cousin is a winemaker.
Okay.
Well, maybe I don't know. Maybe the CIA guy buys a wine there.
Isn't that interesting? And why pick? Why choose somebody I haven't spoken to in 30 years? I just thought it was odd. I mean, oh, it was so bizarre. When they called...
Who knows? What would have happened to you if you'd gone out there?
Really good question, isn't it? I mean, he pretended that he and his wife were... They had just run out, and when he called and said, you know, guess who this is? And I was like, I have no idea, who is this? And he was like, surprise! And, you know, we had this elaborate story about he and his wife had run out of gas out in Yuma, and if I could come out there and meet with them and possibly stay over here, they didn't want to be any imposition. And when I said, well, wait a minute, what are you doing in Yuma? Why did you come from Northern California down to Yuma? And he said, well, we were actually coming to surprise you. And I said, well, and right there I was like, okay, this isn't my cousin.
Yeah.
He said, we're just going to surprise you, da, 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 da. And I thought, oh, God, this is so weird. You know, and then he said that they were getting their, they had broken down and they were at a, they gave me the name of a shop that they were at, and that they were just getting the car finished, and then they were going to take off, and they were about 3 hours away from me. So, but if they can't get the car out of the shop, maybe I could meet them down there. The story started to not make any sense. It was really bizarre. And so, you know, like I say, I called. I tracked him down, and he wasn't even in California. He was in Virginia.
Did he sound like the same guy?
He did a little bit. But he's not, it wasn't him. I mean,
you know why I ask? Voice recognition.
Oh, right. Well, no. It was a little off, and the vibe was a little different, you know. But if you haven't, maybe that is why, because they chose to use his name, because I hadn't spoken to him in 30 years. So I wouldn't know what his voice sounded like.
Coming up, as we continue our special on chemtrails, we'll bring in movie maker Michael Murphy. Roxy Lopez, very interesting story about Evergreen. And Michael, I understand, has some pretty interesting things to tell us as well. You're listening to the Chemtrails Special on the Jerry Pippin Show.